Hey, it's Greg. This is the Square Pizza Pod, cooked up by Sherm Co.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Square Pizza Pod. Today's episode is hosted by two awesome humans from the Sherm Co. team, Alex Abish, who is the Director of Strategic Implementation, and Taylor James, who's the Strategic Implementation Associate. In today's episode, Alex and Taylor have the privilege to speak with Jerrica Jones, who is the Executive Director of InTech Foundation. InTech's mission is to inspire girls and gender-expansive youth to create innovative solutions for social good. In today's episode, you will learn more about the InTech Foundation, how Jerrica got interested in women and gender studies, how her experience in education in women and gender studies impacts her work at InTech Foundation, what the future looks like for young women in tech, and what the future looks like for women of color in the STEM field, and so much more. We hope you guys enjoy this episode.
Well, hello, Square Pizza Pod listeners. I'm Alex Abish with Sherm Co. I'm Director of Strategic Implementation, and I'm here with Taylor.
Hi, I'm Taylor, and I'm associate on the strategic implementation side at Sherm Co.
And we have a very special guest today in honor of Women's History Month, Jerrica Simone. She is Executive Director of the InTech Foundation. Thank you very much for joining us, Jerrica.
It's my pleasure.
We really couldn't think of anyone better suited to speak during this month. For everyone, I'll give you a little quick backstory on Jerrica and some context here on how we know each other. We helped the InTech Foundation with an executive search. I think this was almost 2 years ago now, maybe a little more. And we found Jerrica, who has just been an extraordinary fit for the organization. She was formerly the executive director of Out Loud Louisville, formerly as Girls Rock Louisville. And she, over the past couple of years, we've really gotten to know her on a more personal level, pertaining to her interests and also just impressive educational background. Jerrica has a Master's of Arts in Women and Gender Studies with a concentration in ethnomusicology and music performance. And she is also, I believe, currently enrolled in the Yolola Master's Program. Is that right?
Yeah. I am in the spring going to be starting working towards my master's in jurisprudence, specifically for risk, enterprise risk management and compliance.
That is really impressive. And you, for our listeners who may not be familiar, how would you explain that program?
Yeah, for sure. So I'd explain it like this. We oftentimes want to do really great things in the world, and we start our organizations to help achieve those goals. But sometimes we need a little bit of help making sure that we are doing all the things that are required of us, either reporting to the government or really thinking about the ways in which we care for our employees in the way that we function. There's a lot of room for a specific eye, so to speak, or people who are interested in really making sure that our workers are protected, that our organizations are functioning in the way that is compliant both to what is necessary, given the guidelines that our government gives us, but also doing right by their workers. So this program is going to help me have the right tools to help other organizations do what they need to do.
Yeah, that is, I feel like that is such a specific niche. It's very interesting. We'll have to circle back to that in a second, but Taylor's going to start us off with some fun icebreaker questions.
Yeah. Okay. So the first question is, how many instruments can you play?
Ooh, that's a trick question. So I claim 3 instruments. So I first started playing cello when I was 8 years old. And from that point, I just went through a lot of private study and actually am classically trained on the cello. When I started playing cello, I also started playing piano, although I will admit piano is something I have to love a little more when I play. And so I think my current love and the instrument that I play the most would be bass guitar.
Nice. And what's your favorite song to play on either one of those instruments?
Okay, so I have a love for Latin jazz, and I really specifically love playing music that comes out of Cuba. And so one of my favorite things to play is actually a song that was redone by Buena Vista Social Club, and it's called 20 Años. And it's a really fun song. I think it blurs the line between that sweetness of missing someone, but also needing someone to see you and taking that space. And so not only do I love the song, but I think the bass line is beautiful. And so it's one of my most favorite things to play on the bass guitar.
That sounds really beautiful. And for our listeners, a lot of people don't know that you're very multi-talented. how many languages do you speak?
Ah, another trick question. So when I was little, we actually spoke French in the home. My mom made it a point to expose us to French. I admittedly have not kept up with my French at all. So I can hear it. I understand it. I can say a couple cute things, but I don't know if I would say I speak that. Right now, I'm actually actively studying Portuguese in Arabic. I actually spend quite a lot of time listening to all kinds of music, and I happen to really, really love bossa nova, which comes out of Brazil. And so that kind of piqued my interest in learning Portuguese. And then I ended up having a roommate that spent quite a lot of time in Brazil as well, and just ended up picking up Portuguese at least. Arabic is just one of those languages where it's something that's beautiful to me because it completely perplexes me. And it's so different than everything. It's different, but the same in some ways than everything I've learned. There are quite a lot of loan words from Portuguese, Spanish, and French actually in the Arabic language. And so I just kind of took on Arabic as a mental exercise, but also just a curiosity project, so to speak.
That's so cool. I'm so jealous. I wish I could speak more than one language. So that's awesome.
Have you tried?
Just curious, if you were to, given your talent with languages, mm-hmm. what advice would you give to someone who's looking to master a language?
Yeah, I think, for me, music was an amazing way for me to get used to practicing how to speak. I found songs that I would learn lyrics to, and not only do I get practice in speaking when I'm singing along, but it also gives me a better sense of how things naturally flow together in the language, and so it gives me a sense of how to start building sentences. But maybe, you know what, maybe music isn't your get down. That's cool. Find whatever you love. my partner is a complete Francophile, and they love comic books and movies. And so we spend time watching TV in French. And so I would say, figure out what you love and figure out a way to make your learning fun by integrating what you learn or love with what you're learning.
That's pretty solid advice, I think.
Yeah.
Transferable across many different things, I feel. So let's get into a little bit about your women and gender studies background. How did you initially get interested in this?
You know, I think, so again, it's a complicated answer. I think for me, I am always concerned about the well-being and belonging of everyone. And that also means that I have had special interest and special drive to give particular interest to intersections that sometimes have a hard time with belonging in a general society or feeling heard or feeling empowered or even feeling loved. And so I think I have always had an acute sort of attention for the intersections of identity, specifically girl, specifically femme, specifically non-binary, trans, all of those beautiful identities, and the way that they interact with the world. For me, the way that a lot of my identities interact with the world is through music. And music was a way for, you know, as I talked about previously, for me to learn things about the world, to learn things about myself, and to understand the things around me. And so there was this part of me that was like, okay, so if this works for me, could, and music is a site of learning, it's a site of remembering, it's a site of storing history, it might be the case for other people, and lo and behold, it is. And so I think my desire to make sure that everyone has a chance to feel like they belong, and using everyday items of culture like music to understand and unravel the ways in which we work, or sometimes do not work together for our belonging, really drove me into looking at women, genders, and sexuality studies specifically. It just gave me that more focused lens into the identities in which, not to say I don't care about other identities, but I really, really genuinely have a passion for the belonging of girls and gender nonconforming, gender expansive folks. So,
yeah, you know, that was going to be one of my follow-up questions, is just kind of, do you see your background in women and gender studies and your philosophy that you just explained kind of showing up in your work as executive director of the InTech Foundation?
Yeah, actually, I do. And it shows up in so many different ways. I think our first major connecting point between women, gender, and sexuality studies and InTech is that we are specifically working towards finding ways that girls and gender expansive youth feel like they belong and feel like they are able to do exactly what they want to do in the tech space. I also think that the training also in women and gender studies also gives me better tools to reorient. Sometimes when you're dealing with people and social impact, it is really important to understand like the individual, their state, and really empathize with how they operate in the world. And so with degrees like women and gender studies, you are better able to essentially put yourself in that person's shoes and work towards understanding their needs. And from understanding that needs, we can create solutions. I think, you know, it's interesting because also I think something to call out is that not every girl or woman experience is the same. And so I know that some people are like, hey, well, wait a minute, you seem to be someone who, you know, presents as a woman and has that intimate sort of interaction with these systems that either malign or usher in belonging. And so why would I need, you know, additional help? But I would say that I am one experience of many beautiful experiences. And the idea is for me to be able to walk in someone else's shoes. I will also say that I think kind of going back to that first idea of, you know, understanding and empathizing with an individual's life and their worldview, and then understanding their struggles and then coming up with solutions, also mirror the design process that you find in a lot of tech innovation, where you're leading with empathy and human-centered sort of understandings to understand a communal problem to then create a solution. So I would say that's kind of how they interact. Of course, the philosophy, I mean, I'm sure it's pretty apparent now that I love to think and wax poetic about things, but I also think philosophy does a really good job at conciseness and understanding arguments and really understanding how to present something ethically to people so that they understand and that they can agree, and that really all of our operations as an organization can marry itself with a theory of social change, right? Whatever that theory is. I think that's kind of how philosophy shows up.
So essentially it's better understanding the lens of which other people are looking through to then help solve whatever problem may be ahead of, whether it's you're working in a tech company, trying to provide a tech solution, or working on more of a social good issue. perhaps looking through whatever lens that they have acquired culturally mm-hmm. through their experience. Is that?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Wondering kind of if do you see a connection between music and technology? Mm-hmm. And if so, kind of how does that present at InTech?
Yeah, so I think, you know, the cool thing about technology is that it, in a lot of ways, in my opinion, works very much like arts and culture in that it touches every aspect of our lives. And it also touches each other. If we think about the ways in which we consume media now, it's primarily digital. I mean, we still definitely have our in-person shows and those beautiful moments where we're doing that kind of dialectic sort of like back and forth when we're performing. But for the most part, we're producing music and art online. We're distributing music and art online. It just seems like it's just kind of like the way in which we are growing. And so I think for InTech, how that has shown up is actually through the kids. I really think that kids, we don't give kids enough space to actually talk because our teenagers are just so on point about what the next trend is going to be and what they need. And you want to know what? They have always, at least to us, said, we're looking for more applications of tech that are fun, that I can go out and I can share with my community and just produce that sort of inspiration, that sort of joy that comes from just being connected with people. And so I think tech has a very close relationship with arts and culture. And by proxy, we have decided to start really integrating arts and culture into the way in which we do programming. So an example of this would be our fall camp. So in our fall camp, we partnered with an amazing organization, KaiXR, who took our kiddos to the universe, or not to the universe, sure, but to the metaverse, to the metaverse. And the kiddos were tasked with thinking about a social problem, right? And then dreaming up a movie that could talk about a social problem, and then their actual task was to create a movie trailer within the metaverse using AR, so augmented reality and VR, virtual reality techniques to produce this trailer. And I mean, it was the cutest thing I have ever seen. I mean, we saw projects talking around this idea of belonging and companionship. We saw commentary from 11-year-olds on, I think, maybe capitalism, and resources, you know, it definitely wasn't in those terms. And so what I can say is that we also saw more fun. And so what I can say is that it seems like there was something special about the interaction between or the intersection of technology and arts and culture that one, creates accessibility for general audiences, B, allows that sort of flexibility to be able to tailor and to craft the things that we want to share with our students to their personal experiences. And I mean, honestly, just have a ton of fun, which I think is important.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it does seem like that's kind of creating a more welcoming door for mm-hmm. students into learning about technology. And maybe even, and correct me if I'm wrong, but maybe for parents as well to grasp mm-hmm. the concept.
Yeah, I think it has. And I think there is an important conversation about access, not only just like, do people have the equipment that they need, but do people have the confidence and the know-how to interact with technology even before we get to the devices? But what I mean by that is that I have noticed, and this is just from my own general observation of just working with communities of color, and that there is a little bit of an avoidance or an aversion from technology, and it comes from a real place. Communities of color, especially when you intersect those with different classes and different genders, especially girl and gender nonconforming and gender expansive identities, we see that there has been a lot of communal harm propagated by technology, or just general frustrations from, you know, maybe I might have mixed status in the United States and I need to open up a bank account and send money. How do I do this? You know, that's a barrier to, hey, there's technology out there that aids police in finding criminals using AI, but unfortunately AI has the same sort of biases of the people who built it. And so we're starting to see technology also show up in ways that have the same sort of gender biases, the same sort of class biases, and et cetera. And so I think that acknowledging those things and then offering a trusted way and an easy way for people to engage in technology helps people feel much more comfortable about engaging generally in tech discourse and tech spaces, which ultimately creates a more robust community to help support our young technologists as they enter into the field should they want to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And as we know, a part of NTech is, you know, the NTech camp for girls, as you mentioned before. Mm-hmm. And we are in Women's History Month. But how would you like the future to look like for, or what would you like the future to look like for young women in tech? Just with your experience with NTech and just in general.
Yeah, for sure. What I would like to see is truly two things. I want to see more belonging in the sense that people can show up in the many different ways that they want to. We can be neurodivergent and femme. We can be, you know, anything that we want to be, and we're accepted into the space because we deserve to be there. So that's what I want to see from girls, for girls. But I also want to see better accountability from those of us who have decided to make tech equity our mission, to really start thinking through the structural issues that prevent our girls or gender nonconforming or LGBTQ students of color from entering into the culture or the industry and the culture. Because I think sometimes we think that if we just educate more people and then put more people of color in leadership positions that we've done equity and that this will solve the problem, and it does not.
Right.
I think that we, and some of that accountability is also resource redistribution, right? So tech has a lot of money. Now, it does take a lot of money to do tech, but we do, I challenge all of us who are in positions where we can start giving more funding, more resources to communities that we do so. So that's what I'd like to see.
No, yeah, I think it's important to, especially that whole concept of just understanding that, you know, it takes a village. It's not going to just be, okay, let's put women of color in STEM and we're just going to like fix the problem. There's like a lot that needs to go along with that. And on that same topic, I mean, as you just said, there's not a lot of women of color in STEM. And how would you like to see this change in the future? When I say how, I think of like, what are some ways that this can actually be like active change, mm-hmm. without just, you know, just saying like, oh, let's build a quota.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I will preface this by saying that I don't think that I have the absolute answer to this. I do, as you said, think that it takes a village, and it takes a village on every level, as you said, including the thought generation sort of thought work, right? So, but this is what I can say from my perspective and my experience. I think that actually, you know what? I forgot your question. Can you repeat me or repeat it?
No, so my question was just that, like, what, in your opinion, like you said, what are some things that you think should change in the future for more women of color to get in the tech space or just in STEM, in the STEM field in general?
Yes, got you. I remember now. Thank you for catching me up. One thing I think is that I think we need to take a broader scope on what entering into tech means. I think that there are different ways, kind of as we talked about before, that tech is a site of introduction into the industry that I don't think we always count. So I do think that I think we should expand entering into tech outside of digitally based, coding based sort of understanding. When we do that, we start seeing that maybe there are more opportunities to engage folks who are working in healthcare, but also using tech or education, in my example, and using tech to better understand not only what is the actual number of people in tech, but what are the actual needs cross-disciplinary. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the first thing. And honestly, I just think that I would like to see, you know, girls be able to have the experience that they want to have, mm-hmm. and that they feel like they're whole, that they feel like they have autonomy, that their ideas matter, and that it can positively affect the product that is created at the end.
Yeah, I think that's important. So we know that you're very well-traveled. And just on the same topic of just like women in STEM or tech, are there any intersectionalities you've witnessed among women in STEM across cultures or in different countries in your experience?
Yeah, I think, it's super interesting because I think the cultural values that we have, they get imbued in the products that we make, just like they do when we are thinking about art, right? We think of art like historically as a snapshot of what happened then, right? Music is the same way, so is tech. And so I think that because of that, you do see differences on not only just how people code literally based on what their first or primary language is, but also the types of things that people are interested in change based on what the communal values actually are. And so you do see more efforts in certain places that may have a little bit more resource / economic instability, you might see more money sharing sort of solutions pop up. I really do think that the ways in which we use technology should at least be in response to a real communal need. And so I will say that to say that when communities have distinct needs, you see distinct tech come from them.
Right. That's so interesting. And I always think about just, I don't know, like the technology in general, I think it's something that has been so like overused in a way after the pandemic and us being on lockdown and everything. But now it's like, you can just see it in such a different frame, I guess you'll say. So I guess we could switch gears a little bit. What is your favorite place that you've traveled and why?
Oh, man. I know it's like picking from like...
It's hard.
Yeah, I think my favorite place to have traveled was Cuba. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I would say Cuba is because it was the first time that I had to truly rely on myself mm-hmm. and navigate in a world where, you know, I am so other, right? It's like that the first time I've navigated being extremely different, but also the same.
Right.
And so I, in the sense that Cuba has a very large African descended population, and I don't think that people really understand just to the extent of that. Mm-hmm. And so it was the first time that I was walking through a country where people could see the difference in me, but it wasn't because of my skin here or the way that I present my gender like it is in America. It's the Americanness
that yeah.
is what stood out. What was so cool though about that is that it made me have to really interrogate what it means to be me. And so I think in that sense, Cuba was super pivotal for me in just general personal growth. It was also super fun because I was down there painting murals, so I will slide that in there as well. But again, it's an interesting experience having to navigate a world that is primarily in Spanish, a very distinct sort of Spanish, producing art for a community that's not mine, and really just navigating those intersections.
Yeah, I definitely feel like it's interesting when you travel, and not only do people may see you differently because of the way you look, but it's a lot of it is because you are American, and you're just like, wow, I feel very American now. in a different space.
And Jerrica, do you find that when you travel, your self-identity is maybe heightened a little bit more just because it is perhaps in a new environment where there are other constructs, say Cuba and the way they look at gender roles and things like that? Or I often wonder that because sometimes I feel that myself and just wonder what your thoughts are.
Yeah, no, I think that's an amazing question. And to answer your question, yeah, I do think that it changes. I think that there is a large degree of influence based on what country you are from or like your heritage is rooted in that in some ways shapes the way that we show up in the world, right? So our Blackness, for me, my Blackness shows up in a particular way because I'm a Black American person, right? My queerness shows up as a Black queer American person. But that the way that looks is very much determined by, well, what America says about what this experience is. Mm-hmm. I will say, conversely, when you are interacting with folks who maybe have a colonial history that is not rooted in, well, Britain and the UK, like Cuba or other countries in Latin America, you also get a different sense of what Black means. It also means that you're also getting a different sense of what womanhood is and who belongs in it. And so to answer your question, it depends on where I'm at, where what parts of my identity seems heightened or if it blends in the ways in which people interact with me and I interact with the world, it does change based on the community that I'm in.
Yeah, I find it to be really interesting. If I was more well-traveled like you, I'd probably have more insightful things to compare it to as well, but that is a bucket list thing for me. But thanks for sharing that, particularly with your background in women and gender studies. I feel like it's just, you have just a uniquely informed opinion there. But we'd love to shoot you some rapid-fire questions.
Okay.
We've reached the rapid-fire section of this podcast. And so we know that you make your own wine and champagne. So what flavor of wine or champagne are you working on right now?
So I'm happy to announce that I am working on a honey wine, also known as mead. However, I'm trying to make it sparkling. For those of you out there who are home brewers who happen to know how to carbonate a thing that is not typically carbonated, please let me know. They can, you know what, tell you what, reach out to me on LinkedIn, just search Jerrica Jones Simone and hit my DMs because I need some help. Back up. I'm working on a honey wine and I hope to make it carbonated or sparkling.
Okay, I remember you talking about your honey champagne. Yeah.
That is so cool. I wish I could make my own wine or champagne.
Yeah. So I think, you know, so this is a habit or... I'll help to make it a habit. It's a hobby that I've had for a little bit, but it's definitely not something that I have been consistent in refining up until this point. So I remember actually my first like alcoholic thing I've ever made was a amber beer. And so, yeah, and it was a complete disaster. And so like, I don't know what happened. So I just kind of, you know, tucked that to the side. But then I switched into wine just recently, and I tried making a red wine blend that ended up being a Sav Cab or Cab Sav. Always switch those around. Called Pepper. And so Pepper was really cute. Pepper was spicy with like hints of pink peppercorn and cherry. And I say was because I definitely gave it all away. and drank the rest, and it was so good. So I've been inspired to do a new thing, and now it's sparkling honey wine.
Okay, well, yeah. When you perfect your sparkling honey wine, you have to send us some. We'll definitely support for sure.
Yeah. We'll and do. For our audience who may be a complete novice, how would someone go about getting started with maybe a starter kit or something like that to make their own wine?
Yeah, okay, so I would say I would definitely go with a kit at first. I typically get kits from Northern Brewer. Ooh, it's a hard word, brewer. anyway, I would start there. They have a wide selection of beers to work on and wines as well. I would probably pick something. If you're interested in beers, I would not go straight for ambers. I would probably go, looking back at it, I would probably start with like an IPA or like a Pilsner, and really just go for it. Have fun. You're going to make mistakes. It might even turn out awful, but the important thing is kind of going through that process and making it fun and enjoying yourself. So that's kind of where I would probably start. If you're feeling really, really, really feisty and fancy, I say that at the end of it, you know, the main things you need is some sort of like organic body, whether it be fruit or something. You need a yeast specifically for alcohol making. You can get those online. And you need a little bit of imagination, and you could probably make it, anything that's a plant into an alcohol if you want it.
So. Well, that's great. So I think we're providing a lot of nuggets for our audience in this podcast, covering all the bases from language, music, and gender studies and winemaking.
So wine.
So, to circle back to InTech, what is one actual thing our audience should do to support the InTech Foundation?
Yeah, honestly, right now what we're really working on doing is building out some just go-to instructors, volunteers who are really committed for just showing up all throughout the year. And so if you are someone who has a good maybe 10 hours a month or less to give to a good cause, I would say volunteer. We do have a summer camp coming up. Our applications open April 3rd. And our summer camp will be in June. So we are definitely looking for folks to help us facilitate and run that program. So if you want to hang out with kids during June, let me pull up these specific dates for you all. So June 12th through the 16th. Reach out. You can reach out to me via email at Jerika, J-E-R-I-K-A, at intechfoundation.org, and then we'll get you started. If you don't have time or you want to give in a different way, I would encourage you to, well, give. So if you hit our website, it's intechfoundation.org, you'll see a cute little button that says donate. We appreciate any dollar you want to give us, and we'll take all of it. You're more than welcome. So I really, really enjoy just hearing from the community. So, you know, if you have an idea, maybe you might not have the time or the resources to implement a course or something you want to see, maybe money is something that we have to hold on for a second, please reach out. And if you have any ideas on programming that you want to see or have any thoughts about equity work and technology, feel free to reach out to me as well. I always love having conversations like this.
And for someone who may have time to give, do you prefer that they come with any set of skills or experience or not?
Yeah, so I think some of that is going to be dependent on what you want to do, but ultimately we are interested in community building. So if you need some support in any particular way, let us know. If we can accommodate what you need, then we'll give it to you. We definitely love that people are very intentional with their time. And so if you all want to shoot over like a resume, if you have it, we'll take it. So to answer your question, we accommodate any skill level that you want to give to us. And if we can't find something in the way that you, like, let's say you want to be a tech instructor and you want to teach engineering, but you perhaps maybe have never taught anything before, we may find another role that is best suited to your skill sets, even if it's not teaching. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Great. Thanks. Mm-hmm. You want to take the next
one? Yeah. So last few questions for you, Jerrica. What music are you listening to right now?
Right now I'm listening to this artist called Young Miko. Young Miko is I don't even know if we could call her emerging at this point, but it's an artist from Puerto Rico who's making amazing tracks. She is one of the first openly LGBTQ identifying rappers coming from Puerto Rico, and honestly just absolutely amazing to listen to. I mean, her song slap. So if you're looking for something that's along the rap hip hop vein, and you want to support young queer artists, I would definitely check out Young Miko. Nice. On the other end of that though, because I have this bag and then I have my other bag that is like very like soul oriented. So I've been actually going back through D'Angelo's catalog because I'm just channeling like my inner TT.
D'Angelo.
So
I remember you telling us a long time ago, you're like, I like a bunch of different types of music. So like, just don't judge me if I put something on. I'm like, no. Okay, last question for you. What does Square Pizza remind you of?
Square Pizza reminds me of that pizza that I had at school. It's a very specific kind of pizza. It's like, you know what I'm talking about? Like,
yeah.
I also think of, that's it. It's all cafeteria related.
Cool lunch. We got it. Did you like Square Pizza as a kid?
I loved it. I loved it. And I don't even know why. I think it was just the novelty of the shape. I don't know. Somehow just square tasted better. I don't know.
No, I agree.
It's interesting how I think we ask that question on every Square Pizza podcast. And yeah. Everyone has pretty strong opinions about Square Pizza and what it reminds them of, whether it's usually something in their childhood, but it's usually a pretty strong opinion.
Yeah. Well, I'm definitely team Square Pizza, and I admittedly still get really excited about Square Pizza. So
well, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been wonderful. And thank you again for just being such a great client over the past few years. It's just been a pleasure to get to know you and to serve InTech Foundation.
Yeah, we appreciate you, Jerrica.
Oh, I appreciate you all too. And thank you for inviting me to the podcast. This has been a ton of fun.
For our listeners, if you want to connect with Jerrica, definitely follow her on LinkedIn. You can also find the InTech Foundation on Instagram at InTech Foundation. So, thank you guys so much. And thanks, Jerrica. We'll see you later.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for checking out the Square Pizza Pod, making a few selfish requests. If you enjoyed the episode, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps spread the word about the podcast, and share this with a friend. We appreciate it. Thanks.